It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
Socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, and water. What it means is that government controls it through rules and regulations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
Under this guise of bipartisanship and nonpartisanship, it's actually tapped down the truth.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
On an equal field in the battle of ideas, mistruths or misconceptions, and it is getting us into a world of hurt.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, let's have a conversation. Welcome to the show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. And go ahead and sign up for our weekly newsletter. We are highlighting in the newsletter our op-eds and our new Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcast. You will not want to miss those. There's some really awesome stuff in there. So be sure and sign up for that. And go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. We're always posting really important information there as well. So it is Wednesday. It is hump day. You have made it this far, and we've got a great show planned for you today. And also, one of the new things that we're doing is Headlines for Hope. And that's on the website as well at kimmunson.com, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And yesterday's story is the first part of the story of Jody Lander, a World War II a veteran. He jumped in on D-Day. Fascinating story. We'll be telling more of his story, which will be posted later today on the website as well.
Kim?
Our show for... Yes?
Can I put in a plug for Sounding Off?
Sure.
Because nobody sounds off better than Kim Munson. it's new, and it's something that we started doing, and it's kind of cool because you get a chance to get more into the nuts and bolts of a given topic. One of the biggest problems I think we have is the lack of time in a one-hour show to really go deep. So that's where the recommendation comes. The testimony is you and your selected guests will really take the wraps off of something and go deep.
And so this last week we had Pam Long. She's going to be on the show next week as well. But she's a former captain in the Army, and she was with the Army Medical Service Corps, and she has been looking at the data, and the data isn't matching up to the narrative that you're hearing in the media. And so that's a really important one. Then Dr. Jill Vecchio, and I'm going to do another one with her this week, but last week she talked about the WHO, the World Health Organization. And then Helen Raleigh was our other guest last week, and she did an important piece regarding China tapping down on a... There was a woman that lived in Wuhan. She's apparently a very famous author in China, and so she started to do a diary of what was happening every day and would be posting that. And people all over China, all over the world were reading that. And guess what, Steve? Censors came in and started to take it down. Kind of sounds like Facebook sometimes here, huh?
And they're not even trying to hide that fact anymore. They're actually kind of pre-warning. If this happens, this is what we're going to do. So.
Yeah. And so those are really awesome. And so we'll have a couple of really good ones this week as well. So be sure and sign up because there's all kinds of important information. And knowledge is power. We are always searching for truth and clarity. And there's a lot of mistruths out there. must be a Wednesday here. The rest of our show, Tim McCormick, he is a candidate for DA at Adams and Broomfield Counties. And these DA races are so important. And so we'll talk with him about why he's running. He says he's a prosecutor, not a politician. And I think that's pretty important as well. And then in the third, we'll talk to Jason McBride at the bottom of the hour. You know him with Presidential Wealth Management. And then Lyle Laverty. He's a former assistant secretary of the Interior for the Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. And we'll be talking about the Equal Access to Justice Act. And, you know, so many times there are things that are passed that are well-intentioned. And then, amazing, Steve, they get hijacked. And so what's happened is these radical activists have been able to figure out a way to use that piece of legislation to sue the federal government, which then they're able to fund their agenda. So in essence, it's you and me, our taxpayer dollars, that are funding a lot of these radical activist agendas. And so it's going to be really fascinating to talk to Lyle about that, Steve.
I guess you know, the phrase "stop the world, I want to get off" applies here. It's like lawsuits are now a weapon, you know, kind of aimed right back at us in order to, you know, fund them in a really kind of a backdoor manner. It's amazing.
You know, that's why we need to do tort reform as well. That's something that we need to get going. So that's going to be a really fascinating conversation. Now, my friends, as we are looking at these issues, Rudyard Kipling says, "I keep six honest serving men. They taught me all I knew. Their names are what and why and when and how and where and who." And somehow, Steve, we have gotten to a point in America that if they say it on TV or if you read it on a piece of paper, it has to be true. Instead, it's not. You need to be asking these questions as we are listening to the media and we see what's coming out of that. And then also we need to get our brains around this so that we can talk to our friends and our family that have just been gulping all this stuff up. We need to say, wait a minute, have you thought about this? And so that's really, really important, Steve.
Well, what you just said a while ago about whatever we see or hear, we take it to the bank, is a holdover from 50, 60 years ago when journalism and the news gathering services had some level of credibility. Those days are gone. So when you quote Rudyard Kipling here with that what, when, who thing, that's almost a challenge to everyday people to say, take nothing at face value, be curious, go out there and try to find alternate sources of information that back each other up. It's tough.
Well, it is tough. I had a friend that had texted me yesterday. This is the narrative out there that regarding, you know, the Postal Service has been bleeding money for many, many, many years. I mean, billions of dollars. And I like the Postal Service, but, you know, there's pretty cushy pensions on the other side. You know, typically, you know, it's probably about a 40-hour work week. You know how many hours that we work. We probably put in 10, 12, 14 hours a day, Steve. And so we don't have those cushy hours. We don't have the cushy pension at the end. And so we need to do something about the Postal Service because it is, in fact, bleeding money. So the narrative out there is, oh, my gosh, you know, we need to make sure that we prop up the Postal Service. And so my friends texted me and I'm like, now, wait a minute. You know, perhaps what we need to do is reassess it and figure out a way to get it to a point where it's not bleeding money. Maybe we need to privatize it. And her response back to me was, but oh my gosh, there are 600,000 people, all different kinds of, you know, all the descriptors we have across the spectrum in America, and they all need jobs. And I'm like, agreed. However, are you willing to, and my friend is an entrepreneur that's been closed down for now 6 or 4 weeks or whatever. And I said, are you willing to take money out of your own pocket to prop this up? Or do you think that we should actually assess this thing and get it to a point where it really runs efficiently? And when I asked her if she was willing to put her own money into it, she's like, you know what? You're right. Maybe we do need to reassess and make sure that we're not bleeding money on that. Steve, you have a comment?
Well, I mean, there's an easy little lesson there. You made it personal. You made it, you took it to a level where they said, well, wait, those resources are slim. No, I don't want to use more of my money to do something like that.
So then what that means is we need to sit down and get a better idea. And so a couple of things, we're going to be coming to the break here pretty quick. There is something pretty cool that's going to be happening this Saturday night out in Parker. Melania Trump, her birthday is on Sunday. And so there is a group, we're going to get together and we're going to do a video shoot. My friend Reggie Carr has put together a fabulous 3-minute video of Melania. We're going to do a video shoot with that particular video, and we're going to send it off to the White House to wish her happy birthday, because my gosh, Steve, can you imagine what she's been going through with all this? I mean, Donald Trump's, I don't think the guy sleeps. And just what's happened to their family over the last 3 years. When she married him, she had no idea he was going to run for president. She probably didn't even she doesn't get any of the covers of the magazines, and she's one of the most beautiful women in the world. And so we thought it would be a really nice thing to wish her happy birthday. So if you would like to be part of that, email me at kim@kimmunson.com. and I'll get more information to you. And it's, I think it's going to be a really fun little evening on Saturday night, Steve.
Now, observe your social distancing now. Or not to be the wet blanket.
Bring your mask, or mask will also have some masks there for you.
Oh, so, that'll make it notable.
As we look
unforgettable.
Yeah, I know. As we look at these issues, though, we look at them as freedom versus force, force versus freedom, or now we're looking at them freedom versus fear and fear versus freedom. And if something's a good idea, you shouldn't have to force people to do it or scare them into doing something. And socialism ultimately comes down to force. And so just really important to remember this as we're coming out of this. I can't wait until Sunday. It sounds like we're going to be starting to get back to some kind of a normal as we move to the real normal. And I'm really excited about that. Also want to say thank you to the team, to Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie for all your good work. You listeners, I so appreciate you. And you have a purpose. Today, strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. And make sure you do something productive and industrious every day. Now, our quote for today is Ronald Reagan. And this is regarding environmentalists. Ronald Reagan was an American politician, was the 40th president of the United States, and became a highly influential voice of modern conservatism. Prior to his presidency, he was a Hollywood actor and union leader before serving as the 33rd governor of California from 1967 to 1975. And this is what he said. He said, environmental extremists wouldn't let you build a house unless it looked like a bird's nest. That's classic Ronald Reagan, Steve. And I bet
his sense of humor has been unparalleled.
Most definitely. And, you know, humor is so important. He's able to take, you know, an issue and actually drill down. And he did that in just a few words. So our funnies for today, you ready?
Yeah, I peeked.
A man placed his constantly insulting parrot in a freezer.
You better clarify there. Yes.
How about I'll start over. A man placed his constantly insulting parrot in a freezer. Upon the parrot's release, minutes later, the repentant bird asked, "What did the chicken do?"
I did some research. I know the answer to that. The chicken voted Democrat.
Oh, bada boom. There you go. Just a couple of things I wanted to mention. You know, the protest to get us back to work down at the Capitol on Sunday, there were thousands of people there. And I hadn't seen this, but apparently there were some quote unquote nurses that went out and stood in the street and tried to prevent people from driving around and protesting. And so somebody had called me about it, and I said, hey, I didn't see anybody. But as we do more information about it, it looks like perhaps that was a staged event. Not sure that they were really nurses. And a couple of questions. If, in fact, they were supposed to be taking care of patients, and instead they have went outside to stand in the street. I tell you what, Steve, if this narrative that everybody's on their deathbed with COVID-19 and I have my nurse that goes out and stands in the street, or my nurses that's doing TikTok dance videos, I'm not sure that I would really be too jazzed about that. So as you kind of drill down on that, you're like, wait a minute, it doesn't match up. If they're working so hard to save lives, they wouldn't have had time to go out and stand in the street. And the truth is going to come out on this. That's the great thing about this, Steve, as we walk through this. The truth will set us free. And we're going to find out about that. But there's something smells fishy about that whole thing, and we'll find out. So before we go to break, as we know, it's been rough on our restaurants and our bars and our taverns. And it's important to, you know, do what we can to help them out. As you know, Hooters Restaurants is a great sponsor of both of my shows. And they're currently offering delivery from all five of their Hooters Colorado locations. And they're accepting to-go orders. You can go to order.hooters.com. We did that on Saturday night. You just place your order, you go over, and they'll bring it right out to the curb. And today is Wednesday, so it's Wings Day Wednesday. You can buy 20 wings, and you get 10 for free. So be sure and go to order.hooters.com. You can go to my website for more information. And we're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Tim McCormick. He is a candidate for DA in Adams and Broomfield counties. And my friends, these races are so important. We want to keep our communities safe. We're starting to see that with this COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption, that burglaries are up. And so we'll talk with Tim McCormick about that. We'll be right back.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
Water's Edge Winery and Bistro is celebrating 5 years in business and is now open Tuesday through Sunday, 3 p.m. to 8 p.m. Located near the northwest corner of Arapahoe and University, they are offering to-go food and wine to keep you fed and happy. Call 720-381-6663 to place our curbside to-go order, or stop in and grab your bottles and lunch or dinner. That's 720-381-6663, or follow Water's Edge Winery and Bistro Centennial on Facebook or Instagram for updates and specials.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's kimmunson.com, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And that's where you can email me as well, kim@kimmunson.com, and go over to Facebook and give us a like, and greatly appreciate that. On the line with me right now is Tim McCormick. He is a candidate for the district attorney in Adams and Broomfield counties. Tim McCormick, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Kim, and good morning to you, and good morning to your listeners. It's very honored to be on your show, and thank you for having me.
Well, as we are going through this COVID-19, coronavirus, Wuhan virus disruption, I am hearing that there has been an increase in crime. And one of the first and foremost things for everyday law-abiding citizens to be able to go after their hopes and dreams, take care of their families, to be able to go out to work, to create their businesses, they need to have a safe community. And that's why we need to have people as DAs like you and some of your other colleagues. But I'm hearing that there's been an increase in crime. What's going on in your community, Tim McCormick?
Well, a couple things. Absolutely, this virus had a profound impact on many levels of life and on the community, and one of that was the criminal justice system. As kind of a preface to my comments on that, you know, we were able to work with the defense bar, with the courts and things of that nature to examine and review cases of individuals that were incarcerated, low-level felonies, little to no criminal history, in order to, you know, get them perhaps out of the jail so that it might prevent some of the spread there. However, as you noted, doing that, crime and criminals don't take a break, all right? They don't abide by stay-at-home orders or quarantines. And I think now more than ever, you know, public safety is a priority. I can tell you in my community, just in the last couple of weeks, there's been some fairly brazen home invasion robberies and burglaries that have taken place out here. I know up in another jurisdiction, Boulder, has seen an increase in property-related crimes upwards, I think, of 180%. Jefferson County, where I currently practice, same thing. So, you know, when we looked at those factors to release people, you know, we took into account stability, place to go, support systems, and things like that. But it's, and I think you've seen too, if from some of your law enforcement friends, speeding, now that the roads aren't as crowded or weren't as crowded, you have incredible speeds, which of course result in horrific crashes. There's been a couple of those, and you know, unfortunately, our friends in law enforcement just don't get a break.
Yeah, well, that's for sure. And yeah, there's a lot going on over there in law enforcement. But you just mentioned something about, and when I say that, I'm concerned with some of these overreaching governors, that they're putting our law enforcement in just a really difficult situation. And so I am concerned about that. But I wanted to go back to something that you just said about Boulder. Now, what is up 180% there?
Property-related crimes, theft, burglaries, things of that nature. And you know, when you have people staying at home, I mean, let's think about this virus. You shut down businesses, you shut down schools. Now you may have, you know, a single-income family or no-income family, but they have to stay home and take care of their family and their kids and things like that. You would think that criminals might not consider that an opportune time to break into you know, your residence or anything of that nature, when in fact it's just the opposite. And certain jurisdictions, like I said, in Boulder, I know Jefferson County here out in Adams, have seen an uptick in those types of crimes.
Okay, so Tim, this is something that I'd heard. This is in some of these cities or where there's actually been, or counties across the country, where DAs have been voted into office that have been supported with, I think, like George Soros money. I know that he put a bunch of money into the DA race in Jefferson County last time around. And then as I was watching the headlines, for example, like in San Francisco and some of these cities, they say that they're not going to prosecute crimes of $1,000 or less. Now, let's think about that. For everyday hardworking people, $1,000 is a lot. If somebody comes in and takes $999 of stuff from you or creates that much damage or whatever, that's a lot of money out of your pocket, particularly as we're coming through this coronavirus disruption. And so talk a little bit about that, that you have some DAs that say that they're not going to prosecute crimes below a certain amount.
Well, I tell you, you know, that's true. That's a big concern. And when you look around the United States, there are district attorneys that have been elected that you would consider social justice criminal justice warrior reformists, and to come out and say you're not going to prosecute a particular class of cases or a particular level of crime is concerning to me. These people took an oath of their office to uphold the Constitution of their state, the Constitution of the United States, and to enforce the laws as put on the books by the legislature. I mean, very simple high school civics, right? You have executive, legislative, and judicial branches. The legislature creates a law, and then the executive branch under the district attorney enforces that. I find it very concerning that those types of district attorneys will come out and talk about how they're not going to prosecute certain cases. I mean, I think we've all seen on TV the videos from California where people go into convenience stores, whether it's Walgreens, whether it's a Walmart, and just start, you know, put their arm on the shelf and grab all that stuff, put it in the bag and walk out, and there's nothing they can do. And you brought up something before, too, about putting law enforcement in a unique position, and it is. It's a tough position for them to be in. These are men and women who are dedicated first responders. I have the utmost respect for them, and they're in this position where they have to uphold the Constitution and uphold the laws of the state of Colorado, protected against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And now they're faced in this position where they have to go out and enforce these public health laws versus, you know, watching someone commit a crime and not being able to do anything about it. I feel bad for them. I really do.
Well, I feel badly for them as well. And so, Tim, one of the things, I did serve on city council in my community for one term. And as I looked at it, I realized, you know, I put my hand out and I said, I'm going to uphold the Constitution. And what is very difficult is that we have some politicians that or bureaucrats, they're putting in place things that are truly unconstitutional. And so we have a responsibility over on this side regarding rules, regulations, and laws, that those are constitutional. But it puts law enforcement in a heck of a position when they are faced with having to enforce something that is not constitutional. And I mean, it's very different. So what that means is we need to, as citizens, to be electing people that really do believe in upholding the Constitution. So that goes to next question. And that, Tim McCormick, why should people vote for you?
Well, Kim, thank you. First of all, I do. I believe and will defend the Constitution. I stand for the rule of law, and I'm a huge proponent of public safety. I want to tell you also that I 100% support the Second Amendment. I've said this before, and I know you said this leading in. I'm a prosecutor. I'm not a politician. The position of district attorney should not be, I can't stress that enough, about politics, parties, political affiliation, or political opportunities, or a launching pad for future political career. It should be about who's equipped to provide our communities the best public safety. And really, walking into a courthouse, all politics should be left at the courthouse steps. I mean, I can't remember, I don't think it's ever happened, the last time somebody called 911 in an emergency and said, oh, before you send an officer, are they Republican or a Democrat? I've never had a call in my 28 years of experience on the phone from an individual saying, hey, before we go any further, are you a Republican or a Democrat? People want public safety. They demand that. I've been doing this for 28 years. Over that time, I've built strong collaborative relationships with everybody in the criminal justice system, prosecutors, judges, defense attorneys, victims of crime, support staff, you name it. You know, I'm running because the people in the communities that I live in out here, they know me. They know that I'm going to represent them, and I'm going to be fair to everyone, because I always have. And frankly, if your district attorney is successful, then your communities and residents are safe. And, you know, really, that's more important to me than any party affiliation.
Well, most definitely. And as you say, every person, no matter what their descriptor is they like to have safe communities, unless they're a criminal. Other than that, I think people like to have their communities be safe. So how can people help you, Tim McCormick?
Well, thank you. I always tell people, look, you know what, don't take my word for it. Do your homework, do your research, know your candidates, know your candidate, know their agenda, know who's backing them. You can go to my website at McCormickforDA.com. That's McCormack, right? Mac, not Mick, forDA.com. Contact information on there. You can email me at team, T-E-A-M, at McCormickforDA.com as well. Always happy to talk to people, especially now with the social distancing. You don't get out on the in the neighborhoods enough. So any questions, email away. And Kim, I can't thank you enough for the opportunity to be on your show. I really appreciate that. And your listeners having me on as well.
Well, we'll get you on again as well, and that's Tim McCormick. He is a candidate for DA, District Attorney, in Adams and Broomfield counties. Thank you so much, Tim. You have a great day.
You too now. Thank you.
Okay, and Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, what is going on out there today?
Well, we'll see what happens, Kim. The market continues to behave in a volatile fashion the last 2 days. The Dow has given back about 1,000 points of our rally we've had of about 6,000 points, which doesn't necessarily seem abnormal to me in any way. This morning, the futures are up a couple hundred, at least right now, and we're starting to get earnings reports come out from companies, which it's a little hard to decipher because of what is happening with the shutdowns and all that, so it's kind of an artificially depressed earnings season at this point, but the market seems to be taking it somewhat in stride, not showing big plunges of 1,000 points in a day. The volume on the pullback the last couple of days, Kim, has been fairly benign. So, yeah, if we can kind of stabilize again and get a couple of good up days with increasing volume, I think that would be a good thing to get us on the way to hopefully continue the rally we've been seeing over about the last 3 weeks or so.
Okay, and so earnings reports, so this will be for the first quarter, so we'll start to see some of that effect of the disruption that we've had. Yes, no?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, because, the disruption started, as early as February when the market started to react, and I think there were you know, people that were nervous about the virus even earlier than that. So there's, yeah, absolutely no doubt first quarter earnings are going to show a big chunk of the effect of these shutdowns and quarantine and, you know, slow down in business.
Okay. And, you know, we talked a little bit yesterday about the Roth conversion. Is there any nuggets of wisdom that you wanted to leave with our listeners this morning?
Well, Kim, I always think it's better to have an account that's free of any encumbrance of taxes when you go to take the money out than to have an account that is going to be taxable at an unknown rate sometime in the future. So while prices are down, if you're also in a good tax situation where you can convert some money from your IRA to a Roth or even just make a Roth contribution, just remember with, patience, at some point in the future, those money you put in plus all of the earnings you've made on it, which hopefully will be plentiful, would all be free of taxes. And I can't think of a better kind of account than that.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. So Jason McBride, if people want to talk with you about that, number is 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. And go to airpresidential.com. That's our landing page together, AIRpresidential.com. Jason, thanks so much. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning.
You have a great show, Kim. Thank you.
You betcha. We're going to go to break. When we come back, Lyle Laverty, and he's written a great op-ed that will be in our newsletter this week, so that's why you need to sign up for it at kimmunson.com. But he's the former Assistant Secretary of the Interior for Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. And he's going to talk about, explain to us how radical activists are able to fund their agendas with our money. So we'll be right back.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. For those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lauren Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. On the line with me is Lyle Laverty. He is the assistant, he is a former assistant secretary of the Interior for Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. And he's written a really important op-ed that we will highlight and release this weekend in our email newsletter. So be sure and sign up for that at kimmunson.com, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. But it's he's kind of dissecting, bringing forth how radical activists have been able to use the Equal Access to Justice Act to fund their agendas with our money. So, Lyle Laverty, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kim. Good to be with you.
This is important that people understand just exactly what has happened. So explain to us the Equal Access to Justice Act and what has been happening with it.
Well, Kim, Equal Access to Justice Act, it's really somewhat of a historic law, if you will. It was signed into law by President Jimmy Carter back in the 1980s. And the original intent, it was probably a very well-intended law, it was to ensure that veterans, Social Security recipients, small business folks could afford legal help should the agencies cause harm to them. Good intent.
But, so, and when you say agencies, it would be like federal agencies, right?
Yes, Kim, that would be correct. Agencies like Fish and Wildlife Service. But, you know, what the original intent was looking at Social Security, Small Business Administration, Veterans Affairs. You know, if a veteran felt that they had been harmed by VA, weren't receiving the benefits that they should have, is there designed to make government more responsive and help them be able to recover their costs should they incur, you know, legal counsel to get their benefits that they were due.
Okay, so here we have something that was well-intentioned, and certainly that makes sense to me. But what has happened then, Lyle Laverty?
Well, for decades, though, environmental groups have found that equal access to justice is a mechanism where they can sue federal agencies and recover their attorney's fees. So it becomes a kind of a cyclical engine in terms of, you know, capturing costs and funding the organizations. And, you know, I from my perspective, I feel that equal access to justice has been, you know, hijacked by that litigious element of that environmental groups. And what they do, Kim, they literally with, if you use the Endangered Species Act, they'll file hundreds of petitions to list the species under the Endangered Species Act. And the Fish and Wildlife Service, just because of the small staff, they're not able to process the petition and statutory time limits, and then they're sued. And so it's just a real catch-22 for everyone.
So is there like a large amount of money involved in this? So like what are we talking about? What kind of money? What kind of dollars?
Well, in this this last last year, in 2019, it was approximately almost $58 million, almost $59 million of taxpayers' money that went for settlements of equal access to justice awards to a variety of groups. But that, you know, that's kind of a indicator of, you know, the quantity of our of taxpayer money that is going to support some of these organizations. And these are not small, you know, really tough groups that, in terms of finances, that are struggling and looking up for cost. And, you know, this is a big business. I call it the cottage business, the cottage industry. And you know, some of these groups are receiving multi-million dollars a year just from suing us, agencies, and which is taxpayers. So it's, you know, they found that litigation pays.
Well, it really does. And of course, I think I mentioned it earlier in the show that I really think that we need at some point in time to get tort reform, because, you know, in America, anybody can sue anybody for anything. And then typically you have to lawyer up to protect yourself. And in this particular situation, so the agency is sued by these folks. And there's also, and you mentioned something, I think it's people that have to understand that, there is a statute, you know, within the law, it's my understanding, there's a statutory provision in there that these suits have to be addressed within a certain time frame. And if they're not, then our damage is awarded for that. Am I connecting that correctly, Lyle?
That's exactly right, Kim. You know, the ESA, there's this statutory window of time that the Fish and Wildlife Service has to determine whether the petition warrants any kind of an action. In this case, it would be a listing of a species under the Endangered Species Act, whether it's whatever it might be. And if it's not done in that statutory time limit, then these groups sue the Fish and Wildlife Service of the agency for not being responsive, and it just continues that cycle. And what's happened is that, you know, because of the budget constraints, agencies don't have the staff to deal with this volume of listing petitions that come in. So Fish and Wildlife Service is just one example. BLM has been faced with this. The U.S. Forest Service has been faced with this. And there's probably a variety of others. And what's happened since 1995, there's been really no accountability. So if you ask, well, how much has been paid out, who is it paid to, there was just no agency or broader federal government tracking of who received how much. In just this recent year, in 2019, you know, the Congress did pass some oversight constraints that now require the agencies to report that. And you know, 2019 was the first year in which, you know, there was a reporting of payments and adjudications that were made under equal access and justice. So now, you know, we as taxpayers have a first opportunity to look and see how many claims were filed, what were the basis of the claims, you know, what were the settlement fees, and who were those litigants, if you will. So it's a start. You know, I'm a real believer that, you know, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. And that's kind of where we were with equal access to justice. If you you find that you know, we don't know who's getting how much, you can't figure out how do you fix it. You talked about reform. You know, that's exactly what we need to be able to do.
So Lyle Laverty, I have to say, I'm sitting here kind of amazed. This piece that you've done that's going to be in our, the op-ed that's going to be in our newsletter this week, and then it'll be on the website. So this act was passed in 1980. And so we're talking about 40 years that we have not known how much, what the basis has been, and what those fees have been. I mean, that's, I mean, 39 years, that's kind of astounding to me. So I would imagine that initially those first few years that the law, or the way it was passed, it was used the way it was supposed to be passed. So when was it that this whole thing kind of got hijacked?
Well, it started probably, I would say, probably 25 years ago. We started seeing lawsuits coming against the, at least 25 years ago, probably 30 years ago, we started seeing lawsuits coming against the agencies. And the consequence of that, Kim, is that, you know, as agencies such as Fish and Wildlife Service and in the case of the Forest Service or BLM, began looking at, okay, how do we, you know, protect projects from being litigated? And most of these were not significant issues, but they're more procedural kinds of basis. Folks would claim that there were violations of the National Environmental Policy Act, what we call it NEPA. So if a litigant took us to court and we found that there was a minor error in process or procedure, then there was an award and a judgment. So what's happened is that the agencies now spend an inordinate amount of their time in terms of planning projects that are critical to all of us. Examples would be projects that would deal with wildfire mitigation on public lands. And because of the potential that you're going to be sued, they spend so much time trying to what I call suit-proof their projects. And I was talking to one wildlife biologist, and he told me that he spent up to 40% of their staff time was dealing with litigation issues, that answering court questions on the project and the project planning. So when you look at what that does in terms of efficiencies, if you had to spend 40% of your time doing whatever you have to do in your own mm-hmm. business just on this planning, all of a sudden it has a huge, huge impact on the agency's ability to get the essential work done that needs to be done. So it's an amazing, I call it indirect effect of litigation with under equal access to justice.
Well, Lyle Laverty, let's go to break. I want to drill down a little bit more on this, because this is a particular issue. Here in the West, wildfire mitigation is really important. And I many times have wondered, you know, why aren't we doing things to mitigate these forest fires out here in the West? And so let's go to break. When we come back, I'm talking with Lyle Laverty. He is the former Assistant Secretary of the Interior for Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. He knows what he's talking about. And we're trying to unpack this for you, my listeners, on how radical environmentalists have been able to fund their agendas with our money, and we'll be right back.
Did you know Hooters wings can fly? That's right. Your favorite wings can be picked up for to-go and can even be delivered right to your doorstep. Take advantage of Hooters' delicious lunch specials, like our seaworthy Baja fish tacos, mouthwatering Western burger, or our new roasted wings. Lunch specials are available to go Monday through Friday from 11:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. Curbside service available. Place your order online at order.hooters.com. Get your wings to fly only at Hooters.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And we have the recaps, podcasts of the show can be found there. Sign up for my newsletter. We send that out on Sundays via email. And we always have a lot of great information. We've started this new podcast, Sounding Off with Kim Munson, as well as our op-eds. And Lyle Laverty, who is a former Assistant Secretary of the Interior for Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, has written a really important piece about the Equal Access to Justice Act. And Lyle, you mentioned something. I've been out, sometimes when I've walked in the forest or looked at the forest, it's like it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that it gets dry out in the West, that we have, well, we have human interaction, obviously, with nature, but we also have storms, lightning that can start fires. And it seems like if we don't do things to mitigate the fire danger, that we're going to have fires. And I've always kind of scratched my head and thought, why aren't we cleaning these forests up a little bit? And it sounds to me like we've had environmentalists that have used this Equal Access to Justice Act to prevent that from happening because, well, a couple of things. They prevent it from happening, but also our agencies are spending up to 40% of their time on these lawsuits. So am I connecting the dots on this correctly, Lyle?
You nailed it right on, Kim. You know, is if you just took any kind of project that you're going to deal with, and you know, wildfire mitigation is a good one. If you ended up having to spend 40% of your time just on planning that project, that derails, if you will, resources and funds that would be available for doing the actual project work. So, you know, if we had some constraints, we could pull back on the litigation component of this and get more money onto the ground to do these kinds of projects. That really becomes the essence of, you know, I think what most land managers want to be able to do. So it really is. It goes back to that catch-22 when you do that. The other part of it comes in terms of, and these projects that are often litigated vary anything from large-scale wildfire mitigation thinning projects to, it could be as basic as trail maintenance or trail construction through a particular area. And, you know, we find that these are litigated. And so not only does it cost more, but then it also delays getting some of that essential work done. And if you have a project such as a wildfire mitigation and you're tied up in court for 2 years, all of a sudden the costs have increased and it may take it out of the budget element of reality being able to accomplish. So there's some real implications of equal access to justice. It's you know, and you don't want to just throw the whole thing out just because a group of folks have found a way how to abuse the system. But you want to be able to say, you know, can we make some adjustments and reform that would take it back to the original intent and help the folks that need this kind of help and assistance. So it's a key thing.
Well, Lyle Laverty, a couple of things. First of all, you said in 2019, it was part of the John Dingell Jr. Conservation Management and Recreation Act, where finally we're going to start to get reporting on what's been going on who's being paid out, what the basis has been. And certainly, you know, the quote of the truth will set you free. That's going to be really helpful on that. But I wanted to go back one other thing on on mitigation, fire mitigation, and our forests. Now, first of all, if in fact our agencies are having to spend 40% of their time over here on these lawsuits, as you mentioned, it takes their focus off of what they've been really hired to do. But you also have the word environmentalist, which implies that they care about the environment. But if you do not take care of your forests, what was it, a couple of years ago when out in California, there were so many forest fires that people were having to wear masks. They had to actually cancel some outdoor events because there was so many particles in the air because of forest fires, and which I'm going to bring that back to. The forest fires were because the Forest Service couldn't do forest mitigation, and that was because you had the environmentalists over here, which were suing them. So in essence, they say they care about our land and our water and our air, but because their actions, it ended up that people for several weeks out in California couldn't really hardly breathe the air. So what's your comments on that, Lyle?
Well, I think the challenge we have across the interior west for wildfire mitigation is huge. It's enormous. You know, we've got probably in the neighborhood 30 to 40 million acres of high risk. And the number is probably much, much larger than that, but that are in need of some sort of mitigation and treatment. And mitigation and treatment means we got to thin the stands. We got to remove some of that material. It creates those hazardous fuel conditions. You know, it was all too clear as we watched the evening news in Paradise, California, that is kind of the bell ringer for us in terms of what could happen. It could happen here in Colorado, that we've got fuel conditions that if we had the ignition, we could end up losing a lot of homes and a lot of lives. And, you know, so it's not only equal access to justice, but it's also then how the agencies have been funded over the last several years, decades, really, on how do we deal with fire suppression. And because the fire suppression costs now take probably in the neighborhood of almost two-thirds of the Forest Service budget just for suppression, that takes money that we can't get the work done on the ground to prevent those. So it's, again, it's another one of these incredible catch-22s. But the opportunity, and this is a great subject for another conversation, is the challenge that we have in terms of wildfire mitigation and how do we actively manage the landscape on public lands that we can reduce the effects of fire, that we can reduce suppression costs, and we can protect lives and property. It's we can do it.
Well, we can do it. And with creativity and innovation, you know, and working together, I think that we really can do that. But going back to this cottage industry, you know, again, environmentalists imply that they care about the environment. That's why they're doing this. But it looks to me like attorneys are making an awful lot of money. When you mentioned, what was that number, like $58 million, was that in just 1 year that went to the attorneys and these different agents or these different activists? Was that just for 1 year?
That's correct, Kim. That was just in 2019. That was the payment that went out to a variety of groups. And it was not all just environmental groups, but it went out to there were groups that, in fact, this summer report that I have, Social Security Administration, there were 8,000 claims against Social Security Administration, and they paid out the biggest chunk of that $58 million. It was about $45 million that was paid to claimants that sued Social Security Administration. And Department of Interior, you know, it was a small amount, but, you know, it was about almost $4 million that was paid to litigants on 22 cases in the Department of Interior. So you can kind of see the, you know, if you do the math, you know, almost $4 million out of 22 awards, huge amounts.
And, oh, my gosh,
so,
yes.
It's amazing. So, you know, it's just one piece, so one indicator that you know, has an effect on how agencies are able to get work done.
Okay. Lyle, we have just about a minute left. What is the final thought that you would like to leave with our listeners, Lyle Laverty?
Well, Kim, I think the key is that we need to be vigilant, and I think the idea that we've gotten now through the John Dingell Act, the Conservation Act that you referenced, we now have a chance to actually see what has been paid out, how the act has been abused, and then okay, so what then can we do in terms of refinement and reform to protect this abuse? So we take it back to what the original act was intended to do back in 1980. So it's just another one that we need to be aware of, and people need to be asking questions. And if it goes back to that quote, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. So now that we know a little bit of what is actually being done through equal access to justice, we can in fact manage it, and we need to make some reform, then we can begin to make those adjustments to take it.
Okay, well, Lyle Laverty, thank you so much. Greatly appreciate that. Our quote for today is Ronald Reagan. He says, if we've learned any lessons during the past few decades, perhaps the most important is that preservation of our environment is not a partisan challenge. It's common sense. Our physical health, our social happiness, and our economic well-being will be sustained only by all of us working in partnership as thoughtful, effective stewards of our natural resources. So today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, and strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.